Okay, good evening all, and welcome to the Planning Commission meeting of November 7, 2013. Let's go ahead and have a call to order, which is a roll call of the commissioners present. This time I'd like everyone to state your name for the record, from my far left.
David Litt.
Alicia Weintraub.
I'm John Muller. I'm substituting chairman today for Chairman Schumacher, who couldn't be here.
Mark Seekand.
Robert Leah.
Thank you. Okay, let's do our Pledge of Allegiance. Alicia, would you mind leading us tonight?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Please rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right, we're moving on to the approval of the agenda. Does staff have any modifications to propose?
We do not.
All right, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The agenda is approved. We'll move on to announcements and introductions. This time I'll start on my far right.
I have nothing.
Commissioner Seekin?
No, nothing tonight.
Nothing at this time.
Nothing.
All right, I am going to make one announcement. I've been given a note that the City Council will be honoring Planning Commissioner Dave Brown, who passed away recently, at the next council meeting to be held next Wednesday, November 13. And I understand certain of his family members will be present. And so I hope that all of us and other interested parties can attend that tribute. I would like to also propose that we adjourn at the end of our meeting tonight in honor of Dave. Okay.
Wonderful idea.
Okay. All right, we're moving on now to the oral communications part. This is the part where citizens can address the commission on any matter that is not agendized. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the council on a matter that's not on the agenda? The cards I have are for the agenda, so we'll move forward. Okay, next item is the consent items. The first is the approval of the minutes of the meeting of October 3rd, 2013. Have the commissioners had an opportunity to review those minutes? And if so, would someone like to, if there are any corrections, let's bring them to the table, and if not, let's have a motion to approve.
I move approval.
I'll second that.
All right. All in favor of approving the minutes as stated on the October 3rd, 2013 minutes before us, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Passed 5-0. Okay. Okay, we're now moving to our public hearing items. And this is file number 12000418, a request for a conditional use permit, a site plan review, and a variance to allow off-site parking to remodel an existing one-story wine gallery into a table service restaurant with 64-seat dining room and with an outdoor lounge, etc. And how do you propose to proceed?
I do have a presentation for you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please.
Yes. I currently lease space at 23564 Calabasas Road, and I talked to the city attorney this evening and Maureen, and I will recuse myself. I'm within 500 feet of the proposed development. Okay, so I'm going to...
Yeah, I would just say thank you. I appreciate that, and that's consistent with my recusal when we had an item for the Calabasas Inn. And my law office was within 500 feet. And based on advice of the city attorney, I recused myself. So you're following precedent. All right. But thank you for coming.
Thanks.
Okay. Good evening, Commission. The subject site is located on the south side of Calabasas Road in the commercial Old Town Zoning District. On the right of this slide, I have an existing site plan, just so we can go through what's on the property right now. A driveway traverses the length of the property from north to south along the east side of the commercial structure. There are five existing parking spaces located in the rear of the retail building. The site is currently improved with a 2,022 square foot commercial retail building and a porch and a detached 455 square foot structure. Historically used as a single-family residence, but that is now being used as a restrooms and storage space. The historic residence is located behind the retail building and 5 feet from the rear property line. There's also a small existing trash enclosure on the site. Here are some photos of the site. The one on the left is from Calabasas Road, and the one on the right is from Calabasas Road also, but looks directly into the driveway that goes to the rear of the property. These are photos from the rear of the property. The one on the left is of the main building, and the one on the right shows the small accessory structure. The proposed project includes conversion of the existing wine gallery located at 23528 Calabasas Road into a wine gallery and restaurant. To accomplish this, the applicant is requesting the following. One, an interior remodel of the main building to include a dining room and bar area, addition of sliding French doors to the front and east facades of the main building, a 375-square-foot addition to the main building, which will accommodate the kitchen, addition of a trash enclosure, new outdoor seating area, interior remodel of the existing accessory structure, a variance to allow off-site parking, and an upgrade of their existing Type 42 license, liquor license to a Type 47, which allows full-service liquor sales for on-site consumption, but they will be retaining their Type 20 license, which allows them to sell wine for off-site consumption. I'm going to go through each of these in detail for you right now. This is the proposed floor plan for the entire site. I have highlighted in red the existing building where the interior remodel will take place. The interior space will be reconfigured to accommodate the wine gallery and table service restaurant seating throughout the remainder of the building, with the exception of this existing storage space, and they will keep maintain that as storage space. Their second request is to alter the north and east facades. The north facade, they're going to be they'll change out the center portion of the front facade and replace it with wood framed sliding stacking glass doors to match the existing windows. And that same style of door will be placed on the east facade. Their third request is for a 375-square-foot addition, which will accommodate their kitchen. That is proposed for the portion I've highlighted here on in purple, and that's the floor plan. In the middle, we have the east elevation, and the kitchen would go in that area right behind where the cabanas are. They are proposing to they're proposing wood slat siding finish of the kitchen to match what is on the existing building. Similarly, the west elevation will match what is on the rest of the building on the west side. Fourth part of the request is a new trash enclosure. There's an existing trash enclosure there now, but that'll come down and be replaced with one behind the kitchen. And the elevation, if you look at the south elevation, it has a trellis and complies with the city's environmental services manager's guidelines for trash enclosures. Fifth part of the request is outdoor seating. I have highlighted on the floor plan two portions of the property where outdoor seating is being requested. And this is where we currently have driveway and parking areas. These four sections represent cabana type structures, and the remainder are just tables. And also, if you look closer to Calabasas Road, they're proposing some seating on the porch. And then on the elevation, I've highlighted the cabanas. The sixth request is interior remodel of the accessory structure in the rear of the property. The existing 455-square-foot accessory building has been identified in the city's Historic Resources Survey as an eligible historic resource. However, the interior retains no historic value because it has been substantially altered from its original form. To protect the exterior historic value, the project limits proposed modifications to interior remodeling of the existing restrooms and storage area. No changes at all are proposed to the exterior. Staff has recommended a waiver of the certificate of appropriateness because the minor alterations won't result in changes in appearance of the structure, nor will it alter any historically significant features. The Historic Preservation has reviewed, Historic Preservation Commission has reviewed and recommended approval of the project. The seventh request is a variance for off-site parking spaces. The proposed restaurant requires 40 on-site parking spaces. Because the project proposes removal of 5 existing spaces, the applicant has proposed that off-site parking be allowed to provide for 100% of the required parking via a variance. The applicant has proposed that valet parking be made available during all hours of operation, 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. The valet shall park cars from location of the existing loading zone in front of the wine gallery in the office building parking located at 23538 Calabasas Road. A parking study was prepared by Miniger and Associates and submitted to demonstrate the availability of 40 required parking spaces at 23538 Calabasas Road during the hours of business at the restaurant, and was reviewed and approved by the city's traffic and transportation engineer. The applicant has entered into an agreement with the owners of the office building to provide 40 spaces. The document shall be filed and proof of recording shall be submitted to the director prior to issuance of any building permit. The project meets all findings for a variance permit. Staff analyzed the request for a variance, and given the small lot size and narrow width, there is no room for on-site parking in addition to what exists there today if the project were to move forward. Also, existing conditions on the subject property simply cannot accommodate the parking required by the code. Other restaurants in the area employ valet parking to accommodate guests. The restaurant at 23508 Calabasas Road valet parks patrons' cars both on-site and in the Leonis Adobe parking lot. The restaurant at 23536 Calabasas Road valet parks patrons' cars on the restaurant's property in available street spaces and in the office building at 23538 Calabasas Road. With all other restaurants in Old Town offering valet parking and parking patrons' cars off-site, the applicant is requesting that the same privilege enjoyed by other property owners. The final request is for an upgrade of the alcohol license. The wine gallery currently operates under a Type 20 liquor license for the sale of wine and beer for off-site consumption, and a Type 42 liquor license on-site consumption of beer and wine, because they currently offer wine tasting a few times a week or however many times a week. So they currently have two different types of liquor licenses. They're proposing to retain the Type 20 because they'll still be selling for off-site consumption as part of the wine gallery, but they'll be upgrading the Type 42 to a Type 47, which would allow for full on-site liquor service, not limited just to beer and wine as it is now. And that's compatible with any table service restaurant. Alcoholic beverage sales are allowed in the CT zone, given approval of a CUP. The Historic Preservation Commission reviewed the project for conformance with the Old Town Calabasas Master Plan and Design Guidelines on June 11, 2013. At that meeting, the commission determined that the plans did conform to the Old Town Master Plan and Design Guidelines, and unanimously recommended that the project be approved. Because the applicant modified the project plans to include architectural changes to the front of the building that would be visible from Calabasas Road, it went back to the commission and they reviewed it again on October 2nd, during which the commission again recommended approval unanimously. City staff has determined that the project is categorically exempt from environmental review. Staff concludes that the restaurants and alcoholic beverage sales are conditionally allowed uses in the CT zone. The project complies with general plan and Old Town master plan policies. It promotes retail restaurant uses in the Old Town district, shared parking arrangements, and preservation of Old Town's character. The project meets all required development standards. The colors and materials of the proposed addition and proposed facade changes will match all existing colors and materials. No significant features of the historic structure will be altered. The project is categorically exempt from CEQA, and the proposed project meets all required findings for a site plan review, CUP, and variance. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution Number 2013-559, approving file number 12000418. Concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Let's see if any of the commissioners have any preliminary questions before we open the public hearing. Commissioner Weintraub, any opening questions?
No, I'd like to wait till after the public hearing.
Sure. Commissioner Seacan?
Yeah, I had just a couple questions. We've dealt with some kind of creative parking situations in the past, but they didn't require a variance. They were shared parking agreements and so forth. So there's not a way to capture this as a shared parking between two separate property owners. It requires to be deemed a variance in this case.
Let me quickly take a look at that section of the code.
Is that something you want to look at while go forward?
Sure.
You can think about that a little bit. I'm just trying to understand if it's necessary to be dealing with the variance. And then my other question is, I heard the historic and old town commissions, committees, whatever they are, has reviewed and blessed this, but because of that, this didn't need to go to architectural review panel?
Correct. Anything that, any project in Old Town, because we have the Old Town Master Plan and Design Guidelines, instead of going to Architectural Review Panel, it has to go to the Historic Preservation Commission.
Okay.
So they serve as the ARP in instances where the project is in the Old Town Zoning District.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That were my only questions.
Commissioner Leah?
Yes, I have a few. Firstly, it wasn't clear in here, the entire property, one owner?
Correct.
Okay. I talk about the applicant on the background supposed to enter into a shared parking agreement. There seems to be some conflicts between what that agreement says and what this says. I don't know. Is this the time to get into it?
Well, you can certainly ask for clarification.
Okay. It's supposed to be for the life of the property, and the agreement is only for 5 years. And second, it appears to be an agreement to agree, because it's subject to agreeing on what the price is going to be. So I don't know if it's an agreement at all.
The firm language of the agreement, when it comes to us, would go to the city attorney for review.
But it's coming to us now. We have to pass on it.
You could. Again, I would defer to Matt Summers, our city attorney, as to whether or not their entitlement approval includes this particular document's limitations, or if that is subject to further review. Because our condition effectively says that we will not issue a building permit until that agreement is approved, is in place and recorded.
Exactly. The proposed condition in the resolution is that they come to an agreement where the terms provide for valet parking at the office building, and that it be for the length as provided in the condition, which I believe is for the life of the property,
mm-hmm.
or until they come up with a new CEP and change the game. But we don't need to have the agreement in place at this time, because the entitlement would be subject to them complying with that condition in producing an agreement. If they don't reach terms on an agreement, or if the agreement that they reach doesn't comply with that condition, then staff would not issue their building permits.
But we have an agreement in place, an executed agreement, which is for 5 years only, not for the life of the project. And it also specifies in here that they have to really agree on price. So we have an agreement which is not in conformity with what they're saying it should be.
Right, and here before they would be able to come in for the building permits, they would have to revise that agreement to both include price and to include, to match the term provision with the requirement of the CUP grant. In other words, that amounts to a draft.
And Commissioner Leah, just recently, when this commission took up the footbridge between the two HOAs, at that particular time, they did not have an agreement in place relative to how they were going to build that, but we created a condition to say that the parties must come to an agreement that meets the following parameters prior to the city permitting the construction of this.
Okay,
so we're not dissimilar in terms of having parallel types of conditions premised on future actions, and if they don't meet those future actions, then the project doesn't move forward.
So this document, this off-site parking agreement would not be executed based on the language?
That agreement, as I understand it, would not be sufficient to comply with.
Because I had a lot of questions about that agreement as well.
Okay.
Anything else, Commissioner
Lee? Yes, let me try and go on.
Take your time.
They're looking to upgrade their license to a Type 47. Obviously, that's not something we can grant. What happens if it's not upgraded to this project? Does it fail to go forward?
Well, ABC would have jurisdictional authority over that. That would be between that entity and the business itself. So we don't regulate, we do not regulate those licenses once they are issued. What we do is regulate the land use to make sure that the land use is consistent with the license type that's being applied for. So what will happen afterwards is when that license is applied for, then the city is notified by ABC. And then the city goes back to check the license type against the land use approvals. And then we issue a separate approval to ABC saying you have our permission to issue, that our procedures are in place.
Okay. I raised it only because it was in the staff report.
No, it's a very good point. And the reason that it's in the staff report is to provide ABC a record of that consideration of land use for that type of license.
Okay, that'll be for now. I'll wait till we get
sure.
To
okay, thank you. I just had a question or two also on the. So let's just be clear. This off-site parking agreement, which has been executed by certain private parties, has not been executed by the city, correct?
And it won't be executed by the city at any point because the agreement is just between the private parties. We will require that the agreement that they execute comply with the terms of the CUP before we grant them their building permits.
Okay.
But the agreement is always between the restaurant and the office building.
Okay. So they'll strike the city of Calabasas as a signator.
They should.
Which is on page 2. The other thing, Talleen, I was a little confused. I thought I saw in your presentation a suggestion that the hours were 5 to 11. And in this agreement, it looks like operating hours can be 11:30 a.m. to 2 and 5 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Andy's staff report said 5 to 11, but let me confirm, and we can also pose the question.
We can pose the question
to the applicant.
All right. Because that ties, at least in this quasi-agreement, to the obligation to provide the off-site parking.
Right.
Okay.
All right. And we would not object to a longer time frame in a parking agreement to the operating hours of the restaurant, because when the restaurant closes, if somebody wants to walk across the street to Sagebrush or down the street to Peddler's Fork to continue a good evening in the city, that's certainly fine for us. So the longer operating hours of parking is not going to be, for us, critically tied to the operation of the restaurant. It's the restaurant hours that become critical, because that's when you have impact issues that are generated there.
No, I understand that. I was thinking, I was more concerned with the 11:30 to 2, because if they're not going to operate in that period of time, then I don't care about the peak hour traffic problem at that period of time, or the parking problem. If they're not going to operate, then who cares?
You will certainly have employees, though, that will need places to park in advance of the operating hours of the restaurant.
Well, they're going to take up some of the valet parking?
I think that would be up to the applicant.
Well, I guess we'll find out. Okay, I had nothing further. Okay, unless there's an objection, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. And I have two speaker cards. I have three speaker cards. Mary Lau, Steve Fierce and Bernard Rosenson. Which of you wants to go first? Mr. Rosenson, come on up to the podium and get close to that mic. And please state your name for the record and your city of residence.
Bernard Rosenson, Hidden Hills. I'm the owner of this project. I'll be developing it. Thank you very much for considering this tonight. About 15 years ago, I started in the restaurant business in Long Beach, California. And I reopened a restaurant called the Sky Room. It had been shuttered for about 10 years. You may know that the city of Long Beach has gone through a lot of redevelopment and has changed a lot in the last 10, 15 years. So I was part of that redevelopment. And I opened the Sky Room. It's a historic building, the Breakers of Long Beach, and the restaurant has been there since 1934. It was opened by Baron Hilton in 1934. So anyway, I come here because I've been doing this for 15 years, and I think I've just gotten it right. And so now I'm going to do this over here in Calabasas. This is my neighborhood. This is where I live. I've been here the last 18 years. And we're going to bring the excellence of the Sky Room here. The restaurant in Long Beach is a four-diamond restaurant, the highest rating given by AAA. It just got named one of the 100 best restaurants in the United States on three different levels, including the most romantic restaurant. And so I will be bringing to Calabasas what's becoming, it will be the fifth restaurant on the Old Town area, almost like a restaurant row. And so I'll be adding some more synergy in that direction, and maybe we'll see some more people walking in the streets and enjoying the outdoors. Thank you very much. Regarding two questions you had, the 47 license has already been obtained. It's going to be transferred from the Sky Room, which had an extra 47. It's going to be brought from that area to the Van Nuys ABC, and so we're working on that. As far as the hours, the only day I really intend to open up in the daytime would be like Sunday brunch. I don't intend to open the store as a retail operation during the day at all. It'll be a restaurant only. We will have the 20 license for the retail operation, but it's going to be concurrent with the restaurant. And so we'll be open possibly on Sundays, not to begin with, but maybe in the future. And that shouldn't have any effect on the parking in that building because there's nobody there on Sundays. And the building is pretty much empty. So if you have no other questions, thank you for your time.
Hang on. Any commissioners have any questions of Mr. Rosenson?
I just have one question. The employee parking will occur through the valet at the adjacent.
Well, they'll park their own cars in the valet area, yes.
Okay.
Do you have a sense of how many employees you're going to have at peak hours?
Maybe about 20, I would say, 20, 22.
So that would only leave 20 to 18 spots for customers in the among
well,
the 40?
Well, there's a lot of space in there. There's more than 40 spaces available. It's a pretty big parking area.
You're just getting a commitment for 40, is that correct?
Right, but I could ask for more. The person who owns the building, the parking lot, has been very, very close to us, and he's cooperated. He's anxious to see it happen. So he's got other parking. It's a pretty big place. And the office building closes about 5, so it gets emptied out.
Now, since I've got you for a moment, have you had an opportunity to review Planning Commission Resolution 2013-559, which is the document that's before us to approve or not tonight?
Well, yes.
Got a chance to review that?
I heard it read this just a little while
well,
ago
we didn't,
as well.
The whole thing wasn't read.
Oh, the whole thing wasn't well? Well, I've got copies of it. I did look at
well,
it.
Well, what I'm going to ask you now is whether you read it or not.
Yes, I did.
Whether you agree to comply with, if we are to approve this resolution, and obviously if we propose any additional conditions, and you would have an objection to them, we'll let you come back up.
Right.
But as the document stands, do you agree to abide by all of the conditions in PC Resolution 2013-559 should we decide to approve it?
I do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excuse me, but that would include condition 16, which has been discussed up here, seems to be in a little bit of conflict with your first pass at a shared parking agreement with that office building.
Well, we'll straighten that out.
Okay.
You know, so, again, it's not final, but we will straighten
all right,
that out.
Okay. So as long as you understand what the condition is.
There are two cooperating parties. We'll straighten it out.
Okay.
All right. And who's next, Mr. Fierce or Ms. Lau? Is I'm saying that correctly? Fierce?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Fierce, state your name and your city of residence, please.
I'm Steve Fierce. I'm an architect for this project, and my office is in Los Angeles. We're just here to answer any questions if need be. I don't have anything to state.
All right. Any questions? Commissioner Leah?
No, sir.
Commissioner Seekin? Do you have any sense of how long the project is going to take from start to finish?
For us to get our plans into the building and safety?
No. I mean, if it's approved and you break ground.
At this time, we don't, but we're going to be moving ahead aggressively. Mr. Rosen has been working on this for the last couple of years, so we're pretty excited to get going. This would be the kind of final hurdle we have before submitting into the building and safety for review. So I don't have an exact timeline at this time.
Okay. If you don't have it, do you know whether Mr. Rosenson does? The reason I'm asking this is we've got a condition regarding construction activities, mm-hmm. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And because of the location, it's right near the farmer's market, which is pretty active on Saturday morning. And we'll discuss the condition, but I just wanted to get a sense. Is this a three-month project? Is it a year?
Oh, you're asking how long the construction we anticipate taking.
Correct.
I would say this is probably no more than a six-month project. We certainly wouldn't want to be locked in on a definitive, you know, six-month time frame, but that's kind of a normal a time frame for a project of this scale.
And
it's a typical range.
Is that a, and I'm not holding you to it, but if it's a six-month project, is that Monday through and including Saturday?
We would abide with the city regulations in terms of construction, you know, what hours of operation we're allowed to do construction. And so if there was an issue with Saturdays, then that would not be, you know, a time for construction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right.
And is it Ms. Lau?
Hi, my name is May Lau. I'm the project architect on the project, working with Steve Fierce, and I'm just here for any questions on the project.
And what's your city of residence?
I live in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles,
yes.
Okay. And you are a colleague of Mr. Fierce's?
Yes.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions of Ms. Lau?
Thank you
for coming. All right. I'm going to close the public hearing unless there's any objection. If we need to reopen it for further comment by the public, we can do that in a while. But let's go ahead and close the public hearing at this point. Okay. Has the discussion generated some additional questions from the commission for staff?
Well, I'm you know, you brought up, you raised an interesting comment that I think you were focused on Saturday, but I'm actually curious about every day. Where will the construction crews park?
Before building permits are issued, they're required to submit traffic control and construction staging plans to our Public Works Department for review and approval. So they won't be able to move forward without having something secured for where construction crews are going to park, where the path of travel is going to be. That'll all be reviewed and approved prior to issuance of permits.
I see. So Public
Works. That's standard operation.
So Public Works has only said so far that stacking of construction worker vehicles prior to 7 o'clock will be restricted. You know, the typical.
Yeah, that's our standard planning condition
standard
of approval.
Conditions.
Correct.
But before a building permit is issued, then the contractor needs to identify where his crews will park and how they will deal with their needs and the public's needs to park and have access to parts of that.
It's two different plans. We have a traffic control, traffic and traffic control construction traffic plan, and a construction staging plan. So both of those are going to be addressed at prior to issuance of permits.
Any other questions of staff?
Well, I didn't know if you had an answer to the variance question.
Well, I was going to look to Matt to jump in here, but
certainly.
A general parking reduction can only grant up to 25% of a reduction, which is why I believe, you could correct me if I'm wrong, this is triggering a variance because they're asking for more than 25%.
I see. So they're asking for 100%.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I was trying to understand if it had to do with the fact that the parking was being shared with a adjacent property, or if it had to do with the elimination of the 100% of the parking on site. It sounds like it has to do with the
100% request.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
Talene is correct. It's the variance trigger is that more than 25%.
Okay.
They could do a shared parking agreement. They would be less than 25%, and that would be okay without variance.
So they could, if they had 10 on site and they needed 40 and 30 were in the building next door, that would just be a shared parking agreement.
There, without the reduction, because they would need 40 on site. So there, it would be, if they had 30 on site and needed 10 off site, because then they're getting a reduction of their on site by 25%.
Okay. Well, whatever math you,
but yeah,
you want to follow, but it's based on the fact that they are asking for more than 25% to be moved through an agreement.
Yes.
Off of the property.
Okay. Exactly. That the trigger is the reduction of on site amount.
Okay.
I wanted to follow up on the construction activities condition, which is 17 on page 16. I understand that there are these collateral plans for traffic and staging, but if we approve this resolution as it stands, and provided the applicant satisfies those what I call collateral plans, am I correct that they would have the unfettered right to construct from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday?
Correct.
And my question is, has the staff thought about the implications of that construction activity for 6 months in this very busy area of Old Town?
Those were the same conditions that we permitted Peddler's Fork to operate under. And I was not, I was aware of some construction complaints with regard to noise from the adjacent senior home. Those were addressed voluntarily by the general contractor, but most of the disruptive issues to the farmers market were not realized. And we did think about it then.
And there was no stop work orders issued in Peddler's Fork?
Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
No, we had areas of the project in which there was construction that occurred prior to permits. They were requested to stop work in certain areas. I remember there was installation of lights that had gone forward. The lights were on the plans, but they had not been permitted at the particular time that those moved ahead. I think that was about the only issue that I recall.
Maureen, do you recall approximately how long the Peddler Fork construction project was underway?
Forever. I think we had about 14 months of that
14
project.
Months?
But that was a very extensive remodeling, and a lot of the front end work of that consisted of underpinning the foundations of the building and pulling out poor soils under the building. And so much of the dirt under Peddler's Fort is quite strong now for their efforts. So here you don't have that same condition. It's really an interior remodeling. And I think 6 months that you've been provided here is a good estimate.
Could I add something to that?
Certainly.
And I think that's right. It's mostly interior here. And I think the biggest impact to that neighborhood is going to be parking of those construction vehicles. So I'm glad that the Public Works has the ability to adjust that parking plan and make it different and unique on Saturday. And they've probably learned a lot from the Peddler's Fork experience to further adjust it and to try to accommodate all that.
If you notice now, when you're in Old Town, there are actually limitations on the amount of time you can park. Those signs are being enforced by the sheriff's office, so please pay attention to those. But if you're a construction vehicle and you now need that area for an extended period of time to have your tools close by or your deliveries, then what you do is you go to Public Works and you're going to need an encroachment permit. So that encroachment permit then will permit and identify the areas, the hours of operation in that area. So I think we've done pretty well in terms of covering the issues there through the restriction of parking overall, and then we can come in and then conditionally permit greater use of that area to a construction project.
Did I can't recall, did Peddlers use any of the property, open property across the street for staging?
Not that I recall. They did most of their staging out of the rear of that parking lot.
I see. That's sort of the back end of the farmer's market area.
That's correct.
But we do have those empty lots across the street that might be available for staging purposes here.
That's correct. Those areas are available, and they have been used for that for staging purposes. They're currently being used by the Water District, one of them anyway, for staging purposes. And the other thing that you do have here is the current parking area of this particular facility at Bernard's Wine Gallery is available as a staging area to that interior work. So you can pull in and park a vehicle there, all your tools, everything else, maybe not a lot of them, but you certainly can use that currently for staging and then build out into that that final interior area and then come in and do that parking area at the end. So we may not have a whole lot of impact need on the street depending on the contractor's mobilization ideas.
All right, thank you. Commissioners, just for your consideration, I know we haven't made a motion yet, but I want to at least suggest, and this is sort of nitpicky, I guess, but on the construction activities paragraph 17 at the bottom of page 16, I'd like in the second line where it talks about not adversely affecting adjacent residences, I'd like to say comma commercial enterprises or schools.
I would support that.
Just for clarification, if I may, as I understand it, that condition is number 18 in the revised one that was released today.
That's correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, there is a revised one.
All right. Well, wherever it is, what did you say? Paragraph
18.
Condition 18.
Condition 18. Okay. Yeah.
All of my comments about condition 17 relate to condition 18. Okay. All right. Any further questions of staff?
Yes. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Everybody will get their chance.
I just have a quick question. Where did Guido's or where will the new Six restaurant, where do they do their valet parking? Who? When Guido's was operating the restaurant, they had valet parking. Where did they park? And where with the new restaurant, Six, where will they?
I'm pretty sure that they used just the area where the gazebo is now. Do you know where that parking lot is? And that is part of that property.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure that they used that area for their valet, and that valet had been in continuous operation. I don't recall issues with regard to that valet operation, either when it was Guido's or even prior to other Native Cafe, some of the other business uses.
So then this is the only restaurant that would have to enter into the shared parking agreement?
No, I believe there's one other restaurant who uses their parking as well.
That was my next
and
question.
And that's taken into consideration when they do the parking study. Yeah. It's in the variance finding. The restaurant at 23536.
What page are
23536,
you?
23536. Oh, let's see.
Oh, we have a new.
I'm on page 12 of the new resolution.
Okay.
Where did you get the new resolution?
Maybe I took yours.
Did you know? Oh no, sorry. I think I'm actually have that mixed up.
So another restaurant uses the same office building parking.
Which restaurant?
Is that how I'm reading it?
Actually, that might be a good question to pose to the owner.
That's just a curiosity, right. Really. It doesn't
matter. I don't know if I have the answer.
We would have to go into the archives to really understand how the space that was the former Guido's was conditioned for their parking. Because while they may, if you go into Old Town tonight, you can park in this office building. There's a valet on occasion. Mm-hmm. I've seen him on the weekends, certainly, that's out there and can accommodate parking. So what the obligation is versus how they're using it would be, I think, the question we would have to really research down over there as to whether or not there was sufficient parking to park on site to that restaurant's use as opposed to how they're using their valet. Does that make sense?
Yes, because it says on page 12, it says the restaurant at 23536 Calabasas Road, valet parks patrons' cars on the restaurant's property, available street spaces, and in the office parking at this same location.
And they're probably even using Sagebrush Valet and mm-hmm. anybody else's valet that they can use in that area on a busy night. So the question is, though, how does the parking study really take all of this into consideration in terms of supporting the variance finding that says you can't park on site, but are there other locations? And I think that's what this paragraph is attempting to
do. And I just wanted to make sure that the parking study was saying not only do we have an additional 40 spaces, but that we also are still able to accommodate this other restaurant.
The parking lot has 108 spaces currently.
I guess I just didn't know what restaurant this is, what address. So I know some, like Peddler's Fork, is open long during business hours. So I just was trying to get a grasp on.
I think it's Guido's.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Guido's.
I feel like I can look it up. But.
Okay, Commissioner Lee, I think you had a question.
Yes, I want to get back into the foggy issue of parking. And if I can refer you to pages 11 and 12 of the old declaration, I think the numbers don't work. The 23538 is the site address, not the building address. That's true on the bottom of 11. It's true on the first full paragraph on 12 and the next to the left paragraph on 12. But reading all through it, I wonder whether we know whether these buildings have sold more parking spaces than are available to different restaurants. Much like an airline, you know, will overbook and, hey, sorry, go home.
And that might be the case.
That's my question.
It could definitely be the case, and that's why the city asked for a recorded document. So you could say, yeah, come on, I'm going to valet park you all over the place over here. But what the city is looking for is a committed document to these uses. So the answer is they could have very well oversold. They're going to have to now put a group of those patrons potentially aside. What the city looks for is to make sure that there's the commitment of the physical space in a recorded document. And this is one of the few recorded documents in the area.
Even though there may not be available spaces to meet this recorded document and others that we may not be aware of.
Remember that when you're looking at the code takes a look at kind of a rudimentary formula for all restaurants. Mm-hmm. Now, a restaurant, as you know, some restaurants you walk in the door and it's as dead as a doornail and they've got 40 tables and they're two people. Other restaurants you walk in the door and there are two tables and 100 people. What we can't control is how popular a restaurant gets and what kind of activity it generates beyond just what the code tells us we have to provide for parking. And that's the dilemma of planning. The dilemma of planning is that if you have a very robust community with a lot of activity, you'd probably want to up your code requirements for parking in order to accommodate all of the activity. All we can do here is say, do we have a committed physical area for 40 cars? Yes or no? You've got a little protection here, though, because somebody has done a parking study that says not only did we figure out you've got 40 cars, but you've got capacity because we've looked at all of these conditions. And so adding this restaurant use in here will have no effect. And that's one of the significant findings of this parking study, is that the addition of this use has no effect and there are no mitigations that are going to be required. And that's very important. So you've got not only a code requirement that doesn't exactly allow you to look outside to the realities of the situation, but now you have some solace that you can take in the fact that somebody really went out there and did a real count, and under the real count, you've got capacity to add this without an impact. And that's the good news.
Although in evaluating the parking study, you do have to keep in mind that a big portion of the study was done during the time the restaurant isn't even open.
Correct. So. And that's what they're doing. And they're making an assumption based on a restaurant of this size, this many seats, it's going to generate this many people. Now, it's absolutely possible that this restaurant takes off like wildfire, and we hope all of our businesses do, and that there will be a parking demand. And what you're going to see most likely is if it's in the Old Town, you'll see one of those lots across the street start to open up for valet parking because there's a business demand that's been generated by it. And this doesn't even consider that expansion. If you take a look at the farmers market on a Saturday, I go all the time. People park way down at the Commons, and you walk.
You walk.
And there's plenty of parking at the Commons. There's thousands of spaces over in there. So we know, theoretically, that if somebody really wants to get to this restaurant, and it's crowded, they'll park a little further away, and they'll walk down. And it can be accommodated.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Lee, is that it?
Well, I was just going to tag on to the last thing Noreen said. Condition 28 are telling people that they have to park in this building. I don't know how we could enforce that, but it's the last sentence on condition 28 on page 19.
It does say that.
Mm-hmm. You're correct, Commissioner, that we're not going to be checking who's using what lot out there.
It's
an odd phrasing, and Commission may want to consider removing it.
Yeah, I would think that's a very good point, Bob. I would think mm-hmm. it's unnecessary. Just strike it.
I don't know how we're going to enforce it.
Right. I also just noticed that there are two paragraph 26 on page 18. So we got a little numbering to clean up. But that can be done. But what I want to ask just a little bit more about is the process by which the recorded document gets developed. What really, this is probably for you, Matt. The private parties are going to enter into an agreement.
Correct.
Presumably. That agreement is then going to be reviewed by the city in order to then create another document to be recorded? Or is it your contemplation that is their agreement that's going to be recorded?
Their agreement would be recorded. I would expect that the process would be they would come to the city as part of their submission of their final approved plans and the further grading plan and their further developed plans when they come in for the building safety approval would be that they would submit an agreement. I would expect that my advice would be to submit the intended draft, have that reviewed by the planning department for compliance with the CUP. Once the department tells them this is acceptable, then execute it, then submit it back in a conversation with the city and with the two parties. If they wanted to, they could also submit their executed agreement, if they could submit the one they have now, and the planning department would tell them that doesn't comply and kick it back.
Okay, all right. That's what I thought the process would be, because this current draft of the offsite parking agreement is inadequate for lots of reasons that have been pointed out tonight. And I think, and I'm not trying to be critical, it's a draft. But there are things in it that are going to have to be studied hard by the city. For example, in current paragraph 2, it basically says if the parking arrangements don't work, then the project ceases. In other words, if for some under this current agreement, if the spaces go away because the landlord wants to use the spaces for something else, under this current agreement, as I read it, you'd have to cease operations probably immediately. So that's probably something that you don't want to do, and you're going to want to take a harder look at in the next draft. Okay. All right.
Can I interrupt? Sorry, commissioners. I just wanted to interrupt because as Commissioner Leo was talking about the numbers, I was just double-checking everything. And the bottom of page 11, the 23,538 should, that is incorrect, and it should be 23,586, so we'll go ahead and change that. And then on the next page, I wanted to bring up that it does reference another restaurant who uses this same office building, and that's the restaurant at 23,536. I'm assuming, actually, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly which one that is. It could be Guido's.
I looked. It was Guido's.
I just
called it up.
Perfect. So, yeah. So they are also sharing that. But, again, the parking study has obviously taken that into consideration when it's done its analysis.
Well, I think Commissioner Weintraub raised a very good question, I think, and Commissioner Lee had the same one, which is, okay, they'll produce ultimately a document, an off-site parking agreement. It'll be vetted by the city. It'll be consistent with the conditions in the resolution, and ultimately it will be recorded. But I think the outstanding question is, who's confirming? I know we have the parking study. But is someone also confirming that what is said in the agreement is going to be complied with in reality? Is that part of the process of the next, as I said, collateral agreement? I mean, it's one thing just to produce a piece of paper that everybody likes. It's another thing to ensure that this thing hasn't been oversold. How do we do that?
The next time there is a recorded document relative to that site, we would verify at that particular time whether or not we've sold 500 parking spaces as part of that second agreement.
No. I think what we're asking is there may be 20 agreements out there that consume some or all of these parking spots. We don't know that.
It's rare that we record against another property. It's very rare that we record against another property.
I'm not trying to pick on this, the parking landlord, but I don't know what they've agreed to. They may come up to this nice gentleman, Mr. Rosenson, and say, hey, we got a great deal for you. Here's the deal, and here's 40 spots. How do we know that in reality that's going to work?
Working and what's required by the code are two different things.
I understand. So we don't care if it works. We only care if it complies with the code.
We would effectively get a code enforcement referral. And we would then move into a code enforcement mode.
Okay. I think that is not very good planning. I think to deal with things after the fact with code enforcement is...
Are you suggesting that we should go and count spaces? Is that the...
I'm suggesting we should do some investigation to know that what these private parties are agreeing to is reality.
I do believe that Andy asked...
Talk to the landlord and say, who do you have other agreements with?
We did. I do believe that Andy asked, and that's why we knew that this other restaurant, because it came up, I remember this coming up at the first round of review when the original parking study came in, where the DRC said, okay, so you want an agreement, but are there any other agreements? And after doing that research is when Andy found out that 23536 does share the same parking as well. So I do believe that he went out and did that research.
Okay, so staff wants to go on record that it's vetted this project sufficiently that the parking spaces will be there for this applicant in the number and at the times that he's proposing.
That's part of what your parking study has
exactly.
looked at. It's exactly what your parking study has looked at. It's capacity, not only for this site, for the proposed arrangement, but also for the area usage.
Well, I read the parking study, and I don't think that it says we interviewed landlord X, and we found out here's all the deals that he's cut.
Again, the deals cut versus the recorded commitment is something that the city would place greater weight on the recorded commitment. Our difficulty here in the end, and just palms up, is the person, unless we follow somebody from their car to a restaurant, we really will never know who is parking there and which restaurant they're using. And let's say, here's a great example. Let's say that Mr. Rosenson's restaurant becomes very, very popular. And I go and I park in this place and I walk down the street and it's so popular, I can't get in the door. He's booked. So where am I gonna go? I'm gonna go maybe down to the next restaurant to see if they have a free or available space. We're never going to be able to adequately take a look at those assurances. So what we're looking at here is the size of the capacity of the parking area, the 108 spaces, as opposed to the percentage that would be committed for availability to this restaurant during those hours. What we could do is certainly check to make sure that between the hours of X and Y, that there's a valet guy there when the restaurant is open. And that's going to be important because otherwise, you would have a problem with the agreement.
I think what you might also be able to do though is I understand what you're saying that you know the popularity of a restaurant is kind of a separate issue, but the code requirement of those businesses that are there are easily calculated, and it would seem that parking study should take into account the existing businesses and their code requirement and make sure that code requirement is available within the areas that they claim through your record searching is where they have claimed it to be. Because I'm not sure that the parking study, I don't know if Guido's is even operational right now. I heard it was going through a transition, so I'm
this
not
was
sure
done
that,
prior to that.
Pardon me?
The study was done prior to that.
But that might be an instance of a restaurant that had a less popular situation. So I'm not sure that counting car. I agree in a business that is leased out, like in the other examples we had that we did shared parking. I think doing studies and counting spaces and cars on that typical day makes sense, but I think in a situation where you have especially restaurants that might be having less popular or more popular moments, I think to look at the code to take away that issue of whether they're popular or not and take a look at what the code is. I don't know what the code requirement for that Guido space is, but when a new tenant walks in there, they don't need to renegotiate that, right? They just get that transferred over to them. So the new tenant might become more popular than the last tenant and use more of their code required parking. And if that code required parking is in that parking structure, but it was never utilized because they never needed it, and now you have two restaurants that are both trying to take the same spaces, I think that's the situation mm-hmm. that some of us up here are
To put it into perspective, this restaurant will require 40. Let's say that Guido's code requirement would also be 40.
Okay.
That's still 80 spaces. And this parking lot has 103 parking spaces
and
the employee.
And I don't want to debate the actual number. All I'm saying is that when I read the parking study, it seemed to rely more on what the actual number of cars were in the parking lot, and I would be more comfortable if it in fact included the allocation of code requirements per the businesses that have pointed there as the place that their code is being met.
And your point is very well taken. I think we'll certainly take that analysis and present it like we do as a comparison of building FAR when you're considering a project to what's in the area. I apologize that we do not have Public Works here this evening to discuss their process of how they conducted this review and what meetings they had with this consultant. So,
but it might have included all that.
It may have. We don't have them here.
And so we're just I think we're just suggesting that that before you sign the parking agreement, that be established and that those spaces are actually available to be granted, or I understand they'll be recorded. I'm not worried about this guy. I'm worried about him recording spaces that might eat into an allocation of somebody else that you didn't require a recordation for. So while you're covered, while the city's covered because they have a new tenant that has had a recorded agreement, there is another business that didn't require at the time, didn't require record, but is continuing to reuse that same space based on that grandfathered opportunity, and it might reside within the same spaces that are being recorded here, and we will never know that unless you include that in your review and study. Do we need to make any? That's just what you will do, or does that need to be made a condition of this process?
Staff has certainly happened to do that. The conditions apply to him, so okay. He can't conduct that study. The staff would be happy to take a look at that in this particular regard. I am still confident that we don't have. You would have to look, just to let you know what the exercise would be. It's not only the restaurants. It's every business in Old Town. You would have to do an analysis for the lawyer's office, for the nail person, for the shop, for every business use in the area in order to give you the information that you're requesting. Yes, restaurants probably form the bulk of that, but by no means would we be able to not consider everything. And then to which project do you place the burden? The first project who came along who didn't provide parking for themselves, the second, the third. The difficulty is that this applicant should not be saddled with the obligation of what everyone else got away with. If we have an agreement in place, a space that's available, a space that we would at least, at the very least, we're going to make sure and confirm that we look through the records to make sure there are no other recorded documents there, and that's very easy for the city to do. And if there's no other recorded document but for that building, and I don't think there is, then what we have is at least one area that we can verify. Does that make sense?
I don't think we're putting any additional burden on this applicant. This applicant's the one asking to do the project and provide the off-site parking and get a variance. So I don't feel like we're ganging up on this applicant.
No. I'm saying that the look to try to determine whose spaces, let's say the spaces were overcommitted, should this applicant have to take a look at a different proposal because they're willing to record when everyone else wasn't? That's what I'm saying, that recordation is something actually quite unique to what other people are doing out there.
And I at least am certainly not suggesting that the city has to go out and do a new parking study or its own parking study to confirm what spaces are really there. I'm just suggesting that I want to make it clear that there is ultimately going to be an agreement, hopefully, and the breach of that agreement, if those spaces aren't there or if the landlords oversold them, is going to result in an immediate cessation of this business that is you guys are putting so much time and love and effort into. And there is a lot of incentive here to make sure that those spaces are really there for this business. I think the incentive is on the applicant more than the city, but the city's, you know, have to spend a lot of time code enforcing if it doesn't work, and that's not a very good solution in my view.
Can we ask the applicant if he's had any further conversations with the property owner or with the land?
You want to get a better feel for what they've talked to the landlord about?
Yeah,
okay,
I have a feel.
Let's go ahead and...
A suggestion first?
Sure.
In the agreement, they may perhaps put some language in that the spaces that are being leased are available. Have the landlord stand up and say, yes, I am leasing spaces that are available. It's no guarantee, but it holds its feet to the
fire. I don't think we can... tell this applicant what he's going to put in a private agreement,
suggestion.
But I think we've made that pretty loud and clear. I agree. Let's go ahead briefly to open the public hearing again, just to see if Mr. Rosenson can address some of these concerns we have about the relationship between you and the parking landlord.
Well, I agree with a lot of what's been said tonight. You have to put the burden on me. I'm interested in the parking probably more than anybody here. The landlord, I believe, has an agreement. I don't even believe it. It's a written agreement, probably an oral agreement with Guido's. I've never seen Guido's park there, by the way. They have a large area in the back. If you go to the farmer's market, you can see how large it is. Even if they were very busy, that might be sufficient. Valets park any way they can. They don't follow lines and whatever. They stack the cars in as much as they can. So I've never seen them use it. And we will get this agreement. I know the person that owns the building. He's not my best friend, but he's a friend. And he wants to see this restaurant there. And I will be the first one, like Maureen said, that will be a recorded agreement. Let the others get recorded agreements and then face the wrath of this commission here. I will be doing it the right way. And you're right, you know, people are very smart, and if they want to get somewhere, they'll do two things. They'll park as close as they can, and if they can't, or they'll park far away because they don't want to pay the valet, they'll figure things out. If you go to Manhattan, there's not a single restaurant that has a parking lot. But yet people figure it out. They figure it out. People are very smart. And if you have to walk two blocks, that's very good. That's good exercise. Two blocks going, two blocks going back. And that's what you do in Manhattan. You walk 10 blocks, 12 blocks if you find parking. So people know how to do these things and they figure it out. So we'll be in compliance, and that's what we intend to do. We will amend this agreement so it meets all the requirements of this commission and this city of Calabasas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, close the public hearing. All right, any further questions, or are we ready for a motion?
One other point, we may want to consider putting a condition in that Monday through Fridays, except holidays, the restaurant opens at 5, just so we fit in with the parking situation.
Okay, anybody want to react to that? We heard from the applicant that they anticipate operating Monday through is it Saturday?
He said maybe Sunday.
And Sunday for brunch.
Yeah, 7 days.
Monday heard. Through Friday, except holidays, that they don't stop at 5 on the weekends.
I don't feel comfortable making that call, just because I don't know the terms of the business and things might change in terms of if they somehow at some time decide they want to offer
lunch
or special events. I just don't want to put the business in a hole.
And the parking agreement will mirror their hours, so they'll have to accommodate whatever their hours are.
As long as there's parking available at all times the restaurant is open, that's my concern. But I don't want to dictate what time the restaurant is open.
No, I would agree with Commissioner Weintraub. I think we have to give them the flexibility. Mm-hmm. Depending, you know, you're going to have to see how the marketplace reacts to their business. Okay. All right. Anybody prepared to make a motion? And before we do that, there were a few little cleanup things. We have the resolution that was presented on the dais today, correct? which is under this cover letter of November 7, 2013. So
Correct. Everyone
make sure you have the right resolution before you. And I'm just going to try to reiterate the small changes. On the bottom of page 11, three lines up, is that 23536?
It should say 23586.
23586.
Instead of 23538.
Okay. And the other one was on the bottom of page 16. I thought I had consensus to add after the word residences, commercial enterprises. This is at the bottom of page 16.
Yes.
And then I think the only other one was the catch on 18. There's going to be some renumbering of conditions.
Correct.
And then on page 19, the last sentence of the last condition, which would probably be 29, would be stricken.
Right.
Did anybody have any other emendations that we should talk about before we have a motion? Was that it?
That was it.
Okay. All right, anyone prepared to make a motion one way or the other?
I'll make the motion in support of Planning Commission Resolution Number 2013-559.
With the amendments?
With the amendments, with all of the amendments that were just proposed.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Ms. Weintraub, do you want to give any comment as to why you're making this motion?
Yeah, I'm actually very excited about another addition to Old Town. I think Sky Room, as described to us, will be a great addition to an already an area that's really seeing a lot of change and increases in patrons. So I'm excited for this new addition. And I think that the property owner with a vested interest in this community will really make sure that all of the conditions are adhered to.
Commissioner Leah, any further comment?
Nope, I agree.
Okay. Want to say anything?
No,
I
agree.
Very good. Then we have a motion that has been seconded. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. Passed 4-0. Thank you very much. Congratulations. All right. Let's plow ahead, huh?
Yes.
Future agenda items and reports. Who's handling this, Maureen?
I am. Thank you very much, commissioners. Wanted to note that next Wednesday, in addition to the council's tribute to our colleague Dave Brown, there will be a couple of other little items that are going to be moving forward. The zone change to the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District, the council will be considering that, as well as adoption of the 2013 building code. The city will be readopting the minimum state code standards, and one amendment, which is effectively an amendment introduced by the council relative to the selection of an appeals board that would go to the council. So that's moving forward on November 13th. Then I would note that on Wednesday, December 11th, we currently have an interesting presentation that we'll be making to the council, which is an overview of our development process and how we notify agencies and interact with other agencies. There's a lot of misunderstanding of the legal obligations of the process as opposed to the practices and policies of the city. And so we're going to actually do that overview at that particular time. With regard to your meeting, we are going to be canceling your next meeting, which is on November 21st. But we would like to meet with you on Thursday, December 5th. It'll be a bit of a tedious meeting because we're going to be taking a look at code fixes. As with all items in a code is very large, and there are things that we miss or new problems that we come across that need a solution. As you know, we do when we do a an interim effort to address that, we do a director's interpretation, and we issue those to you to say we found this area of the code. We're going to handle it this way until we can formally readopt it. So we're going to be going back on December 5th to actually do that. I think on that day, we may also want to have a discussion with you about green building codes. There has been a number of changes that have come along. The state now has a green building code. We have been adopting it and using it for a period of time, but we still have a LEED requirement that parallels that in our development code. So we'd like to actually discuss that with you and see what the commission's thoughts are relative to whether or not we have a redundant system or whether or not there's value in having two hoops for an applicant who's doing a larger commercial project to take a look at down along the way. So that's what's on the docket right now. We'll see you again on December 5th, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Thank you very much. Any reports from the Planning Commissioner, from the Planning Commission, Mr. Litt?
Nope.
Commissioner Reintraub?
None, thank you.
Commissioner Sakin?
Nope.
Commissioner Leah?
Nope.
Okay, then we are adjourned in remembrance of our dear friend and colleague, Dave Brown. We are adjourned until our next meeting of December 5th, 2013.